Major funding for the connection is provided by Macromedia, the software company helping to redefine what the web can be. Available on the web at www.macromedia.com.
I'm Dick Gordon. This is The Connection. Baby pictures, happy snaps, vacations, birthday parties. We are all, for better or worse, photographers. And it's too bad for the art form. The trouble is that the thousands, the millions of photographic images we create and consume harden us against a careful or considerate second look. Every once in a while, an image sticks. It might be a news photo or something particularly clever from the world of advertising, or it might be one of the images from Adam Foos. This New York-based artist uses all the tools of photo imagery. Fancy Cibachrome paper, the alchemy of silver and mercury, light, time. But Adam Foos does not use a camera. Each one of his large format pieces is created without the aid of Nikon or Hasselblad. Connection listeners, where in your mind is the art in photography? How do we, inured as we are to the images that surround and assault us, see past family albums and ads to find the eye of the artist, to look not at, but into what's produced? Adam Foos says that all the pictures have been taken, that for him the only way to be original was in one way to abandon the camera. Our number's 1-800-423-8255, 1-800-423-TALK. And the first survey of Adam Foos's work is currently on view at the Museum of Fine Arts in Boston. That is through the middle of January. And you can also see some of Adam Foos's images on our website. We're at theconnection.org, and I would strongly encourage you to take a look at some of those if you're anywhere near a computer monitor so you can get a sense of what it is we'll be talking about. Adam Foos is with me in the studio. Welcome to the program.
Thank you.
Adam, for all those people who will not be looking at a computer terminal and getting a sense of what it is that you do, indulge us a bit. There are so many different images. I thought perhaps we'd start with one of the ones which struck me in the gallery, one called Invocation. This is a life-size image of an infant crawling up the wall in this brilliant yellow background, but it's much more than that as well.
It's a feeling, and it's using the child as a metaphor, and it's trying to depict the idea of how in the way that we move, we literally create waves around us. Each person moves in a different way, and each child moves in a unique way. And that's the way that I make those pictures, is a way to present that visually.
Tell us how you made the picture.
Well, it's very simple. I mean, most of the pictures I do are extremely simple technically. I think visually they're not so simple. But it's simply the photographic paper is in a tray of water.
A large, large sheet of photographic paper.
Yeah, because when we make photograms, we're generally working with life scale. And that's really important, I think, when you view the pictures. I believe there's some kind of osmotic transfer between the object and the image, and that is felt when viewed. When we take pictures with a camera, we're changing the scale. We're bringing the outside world in to the camera through the lens, and I would argue that that's a manipulation. But with the photogram, we're recording the shadow of an object, so it's a very intimate photograph. We've got this large piece of paper. We're in the dark. We're in the camera, and the paper's under the water. Someone puts the baby onto the photographic paper in the water. The baby moves in a unique way. Every child moves in its own particular way. And at a particular moment, I'll fire a flash of yellow light the child is frozen. The image of the child is frozen. And so is the manifestation of the water that the child has moved. The paper's receptive to the yellow light, so the water becomes yellow.
And if you're doing this in the dark, Adam, you've no idea what exactly you're going to get at the moment when you fire that yellow light.
Well, with those images, that's not exactly true because, I mean, originally, that I would agree with you, I didn't really know what I was going to get, but I bought a device that allows me to see in the dark.
Not one of these things that blasts radioactivity into your eyes.
That's what it feels like. But it helps to, I can see what the child's doing, so I can fire the flash at the right moment.
Now, some of us, when we were very small, got this fancy paper and were told to leave it in its little black envelope, take it outside, find a fern or a leaf, place that fern or leaf on the paper, leave it for a specific period of time. And then we'd have what, in effect, you're describing. Am I right? A photogram? Because we'd get the image where the light had been prevented from hitting the paper.
Yeah, that's exactly what I've been doing.
And so there's no negative.
Well, that is the negative.
But there's no, I guess what I'm getting at is this, there's no, I really like that image, Adam. Could you print me a copy of that? This is a one-off. Each one of these images can only be created once in the way that you're describing it, right?
Yes.
Does that make a difference to you that,
absolutely,
that it is the negative?
Absolutely. Well, it is where the object was on the paper. And you see, I think that's felt when one views the image. There's a feeling, with the baby pictures, I believe that making a photogram of a child, which really just shows the silhouette of the child, versus photographing a child where you see facial details, I feel that the photogram is a lot more intimate portrait. And if you as a parent had to choose between the two pictures, you would choose the photogram because it feels closer to your child. The other one has more information, but in a way it's abstracted and manipulated. And so when we're talking about your child, it's all about feeling.
It's interesting the use of the water, because if I sort of step back and scan the gallery of this retrospective, you use it in other places as well. The same tray of water might see a snake going across it and leaving those particular geometric, almost geometric, ripples that a snake would leave as it moves through water. You also do it with nothing at all but just water on water, either sprinkles of water making those little raindrops or great splashes of water.
I was just looking out the window, and it's raining, and there are huge puddles on the roof opposite. And those patterns are so beautiful and interesting, and they're always around us. And I think most of the time we don't notice things like that. So I think I was exploring really the idea of making things manifest that are normally invisible, but not because they're invisible, just because we don't see them, or we don't notice them.
We forget about them. I mean, the
well, we don't participate in that. It's just it's part of the wallpaper. We don't have an experience of it. We don't stop.
But
to look.
We did once, Adam. In the biography that Eugenia Perry wrote about your time in West Sussex, playing in the swamp, I don't know whether or not you want to talk much about this, but she...
The swamp?
But what would you describe it? The men's, the water where you played as a child? A large pond?
Dick, I don't know, really, but what I do know is I remember standing next to these ponds in the woods, which were this black water. The leaves had accumulated on the bottom of the pond, so the water, The water was like a mirror, just black underneath, no transparency.
But I guess the point that I'm making is that there is a time when we do pay attention to a puddle.
Maybe. It depends who we are. I was lucky. I grew up in a beautiful place, and I experienced that place.
Go ahead.
And so maybe I absorbed a small percentage of that environment. Nature.
The attempt to what, Adam? To try and capture it? I mean, you're making photograms of smoke as well. These things that are so ephemeral, that are not, you know, that are only there to be captured once.
Well, everything's ephemeral. I mean, we're ephemeral. What's the scale that we're using? I mean, I think everything is really ephemeral. I mean, certainly my life is ephemeral. Nature is ephemeral. Everything's changing. Everything's moving. Everything's in a state of motion.
So what's the role of the artist then? To try and grab one of those moments, freeze it, make us think twice about it?
Well, the role of the artist, I believe that the role of the artist is a kind of articulation between heaven and earth. But there are many different kinds of artists. I mean, that is my...
No, fair enough. You're not here
my
to speak for
art.
All artists.
You know, I would say that a lot of artists don't have that interest.
But if you talk about nature as something that you get to play within the boundaries of, you talk in many ways about life and death, but I think what I find intriguing about the work that you do is that you want to go a little bit beyond that into what's more spiritual, not just what can be represented from nature.
I disagree. I think what can be represented in nature has a spirituality. You don't need to go any further.
But in your My Ghost series, you take something like an empty christening gown and put it on black. And when I look at that as a father, I find it a very powerful image, not for what's there, but for what's not there.
Well, that's the idea of those pictures. I tried to make an image of a body of a child, a body without life. The idea that there are like a coin with two sides. One side would be a body without life, and the other side would be a life without a body, a disembodied child.
Connection listeners, if you have a chance, go to our website. We're at theconnection.org. We have put there a gallery of some dozen or so of Adam Foose's images. The computer monitor won't do them justice, but you'll get a sense of what it is we're talking about in his remarkable photograms. We'll talk also about his work with daguerreotypes when we come back after the break. Our number is 1-800-423-8255. I'm Dick Gordon. This is The Connection from NPR.
From Boston University, this is WBUR, Boston's NPR.
You're listening to The Connection from National Public Radio. My name's Dick Gordon. Our number's 1-800-423-8255. My guest in the studio, Adam Foose. There is a retrospective of his photograms and daguerreotypes currently at the Museum of Fine Arts in Boston. It was organized by a German gallery, though, Adam. This is a connection of yours or did they discover your work and say, we want to pull something together? How did that come about?
I had a show in Switzerland, and the curator of the museum in Germany saw it and I think felt very strongly about it and wanted to show it in his museum.
So it's been there, or it goes from the MFA?
It's going
over
from
there.
The MFA to Bielefeld in Germany.
After it closes, what, mid-January?
Yeah, I think
Boston.
We close on the 12th of January here.
Okay. The photogram, the daguerreotype, does something else. It allows you, and I think you were getting at this a little bit earlier, but if I'm wrong, correct me, it allows you to actually be a whole lot more physical about what it is that you do, that you get to touch the paper and play with the water. You're at some point releasing live birds in the studio or taking slabs of meat or fish and putting them on the paper to create an image. There's a part of that that must appeal to you, just the physical, tactile side.
Yes. It's certainly not as tactile as painting, where there's that intimate connection between your hand and the canvas, the brush, the brain. Photography always seems at one step removed from that. But I think I'm definitely attracted to the idea of making photographs rather than taking them. I felt that the photogram allowed me to dispense with the outside world in a way. So I could go, I didn't need the outside world. Normally with a photograph, the outside world comes into the camera and that's the image. You've brought it in. You've taken it. So once you're in the body of the camera, once you're in the dark, you can play. You can create.
But you can create digitally now. I can do things on a home computer, which, you know, I might have only been able to imagine.
You know, Dick, I totally agree with that. I think you can make digitally. But the difference is when you put something down on the paper, on the photographic paper, something real, something tangible, and you expose it to light and process that paper, there's a whole different form. There's a whole different. I mean, the only word I can really come up with is feeling, because when you do things digitally, you're sort of removing. You're having that creative power, but you're not actually working with anything tangible. And I think that's a huge difference.
Isn't it the same in that you're manipulating whatever it is that you get to control? Let's talk about a piece of yours that's often talked about. This is one called Love. For people, I'll describe it as best I can. Stop me or correct me if I'm getting this wrong, but it's two rabbits facing each other. You can actually see the light in the piece because it comes right through the thin membrane of their ears. And there's all this fancy colored ribbon work that connects them and illustrates the rest of the piece. Fair enough?
Yes.
That's what I see.
Well, the ribbon work is the intestines of the rabbits.
But I need to be told that.
I disagree. I think if you spend enough time with that picture, you'd be able to figure that out.
You think so?
Absolutely. Why? I mean, people have.
Yeah, all right.
I mean, even when the rabbits aren't in there. I mean, most of us have seen intestine. So somewhere at the back of our mind, we know that it's intestine.
And
But you couldn't make that picture digitally. That's impossible, because that's really the intestines have... There's a chemical reaction between the blood and the chemistry on the intestines and the photographic paper.
That wasn't something you were able to predict, was it? I mean, not to the extent that you were going to say, I'd have a little bit of green here and a little bit of blue over here.
No, that's an uncontrollable thing. But that's part of the title of the picture, Love.
Should there always be something that's a little bit beyond your control as an artist?
I don't want to say as an artist. I want to say about myself, Adam Fuss. I'm interested in setting up a situation where I'm not in control. If I mean, probably that's why I'm a photographer, I'm not a painter, because with painting, it's a mark. It's a hand mark, and I would argue it's an ego mark. So when you've got water falling on water, I can set it up to make that happen, but I can't I can't really control how the water moves. I can't control which way the snake is going to swim.
But you or do the motion get to of the choose snake. That yeah, that's an image that you're going to put on the wall of a gallery and say, I'm Adam Foos, and that's my work.
Absolutely. Absolutely. But I want a character in the image that's not mine, because I believe that by me not being there, I can present something that in a way is universal. I think the image of a snake swimming in water or a baby in yellow light is something that someone in India could understand, or someone in Boston. One doesn't need language.
Our number is 1-800-423-8255. My guest is the artist, Adam Foos. And we're talking about his use of photographic technique to make a picture, tell a story. Who's the name of the fellow who was doing it 175 years ago? I wrote it down, but you'll know him.
William. You mean Fox Talbot?
Yeah.
Well, Fox Talbot and Daguerre were working at the same time on totally different processes. The process you described earlier, where with when you were young and you got the paper and went into the sun,
right,
that's closer to Fox Talbot. Daguerre's process, the daguerreotype, which was the first commercial photographic process, produced images that were in a way the opposite of Talbot's. They were fully formed. I like to think of the Daguerre as the Rolls Royce of photography, because it has...
Even today?
Yeah, even today, because it has such fine detail. It has the ability to be almost holographic.
The daguerreotype, when I say the word, it already means to me something that's very old, like a photograph of a distant ancestor taken by that person's ancestors before they left the old country and moved to the United States.
It's old, yes. It's old, but I was interested in it for one reason, for many reasons, but one of the reasons is that it's a print medium. I mean, you could say that painting is old. You can go and see paintings that are 25,000 years old in a cave, but people are still painting today. So, I think the daguerreotype is... We're used to seeing 19th century daguerreotypes, but that doesn't mean that the medium can't be used today in a way that is about today.
Remind us again what it is, how it works, how you make a daguerreotype.
Well, it's a kind of long and complicated process, but...
It's a bit of magic and alchemy at the same time.
Yeah, I mean, it's fascinating because it can be so elemental. One takes a sheet of copper and silver plates it, then it exposes it to iodine vapor. That creates a light-sensitive surface.
That's still in the dark. That's not creating the image with the iodine, is it?
No, that's sensitizing it. That's taking the metal and making a piece of metal light sensitive. So you're creating a very thin layer of light sensitive chemistry on the surface of a piece of silver. Then you can expose it to light. Take a picture, in other words. You can put it in a camera, or you could lay an object on it and expose it to light, a photogram. I mean, it's really like a piece of film. It's a weird piece of film. It's a metal piece of film. Then you have to develop it, and it develops in mercury vapor or in red light.
Just exposing it to red light will bring the image out.
Yeah, over a long period of time. And it's very interesting. That was a footnote to history in the Daguerrean era, the discovery that by a scientist named Becquerel, who also measured the electrical current in vegetables. So he discovered that you could develop daguerreotypes in red light over a period of time, and his experiments were re-explored in the 1980s, and people discovered that you could make images, high quality images. So there are now two ways to make daguerreotypes. In the 1980s, there was an advance in the daguerreotype medium. So it's certainly not dead, and I think more and more people are becoming interested in that process, because it's such, I mean, apart from having this possibility of creating this holographic effect, there's something really magic about the idea of a photograph that is a mirror.
Which is why at one point in the exhibit you choose to put human skulls up as daguerreotype images, not for, well, in part so we see the skulls, but in part so we see our own faces reflected in them.
Yes, that's a group of pictures of human skulls, of adults, of children, of fetuses, and we can see ourselves as we see the pictures.
Our number is 1-800-423-8255, 1-800-423-TALK, to Durham, North Carolina. And another, Adam, is on the phone. Hi, Adam.
Hi, how's it going?
Fine, thanks for calling.
Yeah, I was actually, my question is not so much a criticism, but just wondering how you come at a certain angle of photography, being that I was a photo student, and right now I practice photography commercially as well as do graphic design and whatnot. But my main issue in dealing with photography through college, and basically the exception of photography as a fine art, many of the local galleries would only accept black and white photography. They wouldn't accept any color photography. And even nowadays, you know, photography is still not so much accepted as a fine art as I feel it should be. Even, you know, a great heartfelt image of, you know, a father taking a picture of his daughter with a one-time use camera, I still feel can have wonderful artistic significance and be a beautiful image. But I fear.
But you
that
don't what, get no respect, right, Adam?
Exactly, and I fear that what you're doing is something that I used to do when I would get blocked, and that simply turn back the contact prints, head back in the dark room, grab some forks and some lace, throw them on a piece of paper and flash it with some light, because it's so simple and it's so real, and it is replicatable, you know, just by pressing another paper.
What's your point, Adam, that the images themselves will never be
Well, not that, but I fear that what isn't helping photography any. It's not doing anything for the grand scheme. You're giving in to everyone who doesn't accept photography as a fine art as the norm and saying, okay, well, I'll show you that I can make an image with light and paper the same way people use paint and canvas.
Adam, I don't feel that way at all. I mean, the way I came to make the Photogram was through a process of exploring other photographic processes, using a normal camera, building pinhole cameras. I wanted to make images, and I still do, that are interesting to me. And the gallery thing is incidental in a way to that. I mean, it's certainly important, but it's secondary to my need to create images that are compelling to me. And I was really personally bored with most of the images that I was seeing when I was younger, when I was starting out. And I didn't want to make images like that. I wanted to make images that I felt had life, had breath for me. And I certainly haven't been able to control whether people or galleries like what I do. But I'll tell you that they have. And you know, if you don't want to make images in the darkroom, you don't have to. But you need to find a way to make pictures that's totally compelling for you.
Adam, thanks for your call. You're listening to The Connection from National Public Radio. I heard a little bit of the teacher in you. There, do you do any teaching?
Just a little bit.
And do you like that?
It's interesting to be one-on-one with people and see their work and try to find where that work comes from and what it might say. I find that fascinating.
I always find when I'm talking to students about journalism that I find myself having to come up with a way of explaining something that I've always done without thinking of. And then it's sort of after that experience I go, oh, that's why.
Yeah, I often find when I'm talking about my work that it's in that moment that when I have to vocalize it, that I actually understand something about what I've been doing, because what I do is very intuitive.
1-800-423-8255 to Franklin, Massachusetts. Now Pat's on the line. Hi, Pat.
Hi. First off, what beautiful images I'm seeing on the computer. And my practical side begs to ask you, how do you put a baby in bleach?
Oh, no, not in bleach.
Okay, well, maybe you could just inform me so I don't go out and, you know.
Do not do this at home.
Okay.
No, you can do it at home, but just use water.
Okay, so no, it was just water.
No, we don't want to do anything to any babies to injure them in any way.
Well, let me just say one thing that the previous caller questioning your work in some way, though I respect his ability to, you know, say something, this work is extraordinary. That's all I want to say.
I don't think the previous caller was questioning my work. I think he was questioning his work. And, you know, his relationship to the art world. And, I mean, I didn't really address that in my answer to him, but, you know, photography can be whatever we want it to be. That's up to the creative individual.
We'll talk a little bit more about that when we come back after the break. Our number is 1-800-423-8255. Adam Foose is my guest. His display of, I keep wanting to say photographs. It's wrong to say photographs. They're photograms and daguerreotypes, right?
No, we can say photograph. I think we can say photographs. The definitions break down.
All right.
They really break down.
We'll be back right after the break. I'm Dick Gordon. This is The Connection from NPR.
Funding for The Connection is made possible by Macromedia, the software company helping to redefine what the web can be. Available on the web at www.macromedia.com.
From Boston University, this is WBUR, Boston's NPR news station. It's all but official, coming up on Here and...
You're listening to The Connection from National Public Radio. My name's Dick Gordon. Adam Foose is in the studio with me on our website at theconnection.org, a gallery of computerized representations of photographs of Adams, which are currently on display at the Museum of Fine Art in Boston. It's a display that will be traveling over to Europe in the new year. Our number is 1-800-423-8255. We're talking about the style of work that Adam chooses, the way that photograms, daguerreotypes are seen and consumed by all of us. I'm curious to hear from you, Adam. When you hang a retrospective of 15 years of your work and you have, you know, the holographic daguerreotypes on one side of the wall looking across at images from years earlier on the other side, what's that like when you stand in the gallery and look
around?
I think
that's wonderful. It's such a great opportunity, because I do see so many of those pictures I see as symbols or metaphors. So the way that they can work with each other symbolically is really, I think, a fuller expression of the work. I mean, I would say they're made to go together.
But you might not have said that had you not had the opportunity to pull them all out of whatever collections and museums they're in and hang them in one show.
Well, I can hang them in a book.
True enough. But there is something about a gallery experience.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, the pictures really are... one can see the scale, one can see the detail in the actual print.
Our number is 1-800-423-8255 to Boston, and Gabor is joining us. Hi, Gabor.
Hi.
Thanks for calling.
Oh, my pleasure. It was very interesting for me because for a while I was helping Professor George Kepes to create photograms. And part of the magic of it seemed to me that it's very unpredictable what you will get. And I was a little bit surprised that Adam is using a device to see in the dark. And I was wondering whether he thinks that takes away from the process.
I've only used that, actually, for the babies.
I see.
And that's...
It's just sort of a parent thing, right? Is my child's face down in the water or not?
Yeah. Well, I want to keep an eye on the child, but you know, it's that thing about the idea of making a mark or allowing nature to make the mark. I can't control the way the child moves, but I want to aestheticize how the child is depicted in the picture.
Do you know the professor that Gabor speaks of?
I do. I don't know his work well, but I know he worked in Chicago and was an important educator.
Yeah, he was at MIT for a long time, and he was primarily an abstract painter. But the way he did his photograms was resembling the way he would create paintings, a very tactile way of placing objects and actually using a flashlight as opposed to a direct light, which gave it a three-dimensionality.
Mm.
And interestingly, my wife is having a show of her photograms at Black and White this month. So it's very interesting how this medium seems to become maybe more popular.
I think the photogram has this interesting history from the very early days. Through the history of photography, it's popped up at certain moments. I wonder if it isn't becoming interesting to people now because in a way, photography is dead now that the digital medium has arrived. I mean, photography as we knew it, I think, has died. Silver photography is dying. And maybe people also just feel that they want to make pictures that have a poetry about them, and the photogram seems a way to do that. It's a different, it's a different kind of visual language. We can recognize information in the photogram in a different way. It's as if our brains are not used to reading visually. In that way, we're so conditioned to the camera. And I would argue that we're bored of camera images.
We're bored with them as art. We're bored with them as...
Well, I should say I'm bored of them. I mean, but there are so many people using cameras, and it's as if everyone was painting with the same size paintbrush on the same canvas. I would argue that we're just so used to that. We've seen billions of images. We're so used to that visual syntax that it's boring now.
But let's be precise now. You're speaking about... You're not speaking about family vacation pictures, which is a record of a moment that people put away, and it's not the image, but the fact that it exists that matters. What you're talking about is whether or not there's anything new or exciting or alive or interesting that says, hey, let's look at that again, right?
Well, I would even say with the family pictures too, because how incredible it is to see your family in a stereo picture, stereo photography, which you can view, you can learn how to see stereo images without the aid of a device. Takes a few hours of practice, and you see you can see your family photographed in a location, and seeing them in stereo, it brings back a memory that's so rich and vivid, and makes the normal picture seem totally redundant. I would argue that we should teach people in school how to view stereo pairs.
Hmm.
The newspaper should be printed in stereo pairs. The experience is just so much richer. And I just strongly believe that there's an inherent boredom that we have in pictures produced in that way, in the normal way. We don't even know about it. We're totally conditioned. And we're totally conditioned to think of photography as something that comes in a box from Japan or Germany.
Our number is 1-800-423-8255 to Boston, and Anna's on the line. Hi, Anna.
Hi, how are you?
Fine, thanks for calling.
Good. I don't have a question. I just wanted to thank him, Adam,
I have never done this before in my life, but my husband and I are members of the Museum of Fine Art, and we went to the show, and I actually called the MFA after to get an address to write him a letter, which I have done, and then when we saw he's going to be lecturing tonight, I'm actually going to give him tonight, but his work just moved me so much. I myself am a painter and a photographer. My husband is a scientist, and I had seen a blurb in our little monthly magazine and thought, oh, okay, this looks like something my husband and I would like to view, and we had no idea.
Anna, let me put you to work. Why did it work? Why weren't you bored with these images?
Oh, my gosh. Well, we went in, and for one thing, the way that the MFA has presented it is perfect. The lighting, everything is perfect. But my husband and I actually separated. He went his way, and I went mine. And I think he was really into the whole technique of it, whereas just piece after piece really just struck an emotional core in me. It just...
You're talking about reaction. I want to know what you saw.
Okay. The ones that really stuck out for me was, for example, the series on the children where it was completely black. But if you continued to look at the photographs, the images of the children would slowly but surely emerge.
The dark
children. From the darkness. And at the time, I was actually reading from another NPR interview the book Kidnapped on the History of Kidnapping in America. And so it just was kind of eerie to look at these images that could kind of be speaking about the loss of innocence or actually physically losing your children. And I don't know, that struck me. And then the...
Okay, Anna, I'm going to stop you there because you've got a great image that you put on the table for us. And I want to hear Adam's on the dark children.
Well, interestingly enough, the dark children photographs are photographs, they're not photograms. And I think of them as my best work, actually. And they're very dark, and you have to work, which is so different from a normal photograph where the experience is passive and the image comes to you.
How many are there in the exhibit? Five, six?
There's six or seven, I think. But your point about kidnapping is interesting because I thought of those as really a kind of form of self-portrait or a form of portrait, not of the child, but of an adult. The idea of perhaps another life or a lost life in oneself or something vulnerable like a child, something that's in the dark, something that needs to be nurtured, something that's hard to see.
Anna, thanks for your call. You're listening to The Connection from National Public Radio. Our number is 1-800-423-8255. Adam, your use of light is something that I think distinguishes the work that I remember after having seen something, because you don't necessarily think about it just as light. You're thinking about it also as that kind of, what, not a continuum, but light and time working together.
Dick, most of my pictures are exposed actually with a short amount of light, with a flash. So it's more... Technically, most of the pictures are not that involved with light, but some of them depict light. And I would argue that that's a very... When the subject is light, that's a very open image, and... one really can sit with that infinitely and ask oneself the question of what is light and what does that mean to me.
But the link for me as a viewer between a painting, which appeals to me, and a photographic image, which appeals to me, is that the artist in both makes a really clever use of the light. And it's got to be, I mean, maybe I'm putting words in your mouth, but it has to be in my mind, in your mind, something that is absolutely essential in figuring out how to make the image work.
There is light and there's the image of the light. And I think a lot of the time I'm interested in the light. Light is the subject.
And you're in a number of cases, shining light in places where we don't expect to see it. For me, the dark children, the invocation, the infants in the water, these are very womb-like images. And though none of us can actually go back and imagine what that was like for us, it's supposed to be a pretty dark place, and you illuminate that.
That's nice. I hope so. I mean, I hope I can do something.
But is that part of what you do consciously, is take a light into places where we're not used to seeing it?
What do you mean by light? I mean, I try and make pictures that are beautiful, actually. And I would say the experience of beauty is light, a kind of light.
The light. You should talk about the light as opposed to light. What do you mean by that?
That's a tough question. I mean, especially on the radio. But I think light is so many things. Perhaps it's a quality of light that is about understanding, or a kind of understanding.
As in seeing the light?
Well, seeing the light actually is an experience of the removal of the mystery of light. One has a profound understanding if one sees the light, but perhaps the image of light can point the way to that understanding.
You should leave it at that. Let people take a look at your images, your use of light. On our website, theconnection.org, or if you're in the Boston area at the Museum of Fine Arts. And if you are actually in the Boston area as we're speaking now, you'll know that, or you should know, that Adam will be speaking at the museum with the curator, Cheryl Brutfan. That's tonight at 7 o'clock. Adam, thanks so much for coming in. Nice to have you on the program.
Thank you for giving me the opportunity to talk about pictures.
My name's Dick Gordon. This is The Connection.
Funding for The Connection is made possible by Macromedia, the software company helping to redefine what the web can be. To purchase cassettes and CDs of The Connection, please visit www.theconnection.org or phone 1-800-909-9287.
This is WBUR. Here and Now is next with news and a special report on the Democratic Party's decision.